You're listening to Shop Talk with your host, Kevin Tates. Brought to you by Eastwood Tools. Everything you need to do the job right.
Hey, gearheads, you're listening to Shop Talk. Brought to you by Eastwood. Do the job right with the help of the Eastwood Company. I'm your host, Kevin Tates, and today we're talking with a guy that I've known for quite a while. Somebody that's got a colorful past and seems to have fallen down the cosmic stairs and landed on his feet at the bottom relatively unharmed. We're talking with Kevin Tates. Yeah, that's right, Kevin Tates. Not somebody that shares my name, but actually me. And if this seems a little narcissistic, well, indulge us for a little while and listen to what Kevin has to say. Over the years, I've had a lot of people ask me how I got into the industry and how I ended up doing what I do for a living and how I got my start working on cars. So I thought I'd spend a little time with me getting the story from the horse's mouth or the horse's ass, depending on what you've heard. I may even surprise me with a few of the answers to the questions I'll ask me. Well, that's kind of weird, but take a listen to Kevin Tates talking with Kevin Tates. Hey, gearheads, I'm Kevin Tates, and you're listening to Shop Talk, brought to you by Eastwood. Well, we thought we'd do something a little goofy and maybe just a little silly, just a tad narcissistic with this show. I get quite a few people when I'm out and about at car shows or trade shows or heck, even at Home Depot, asking me questions about a variety of the things that I'm involved in, primarily the TV shows. So I thought it would be fun to interview myself and get the skinny on a bunch of stuff. So we've got me on the phone right now. Hey, Kevin, thanks for joining us. What's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing? Well, we're working at the shop, finishing tiny details on Jaded. I've started a brand new project and wrapping up a new DVD, which I'm very, very excited about.
Well, that's kind of cool. Sounds like you're busy, and I want to talk more about some specific things that you mentioned later on, but for now, let's get into the crux of it. How did you get started becoming a gearhead? How'd you get the bug, and what inspired you, and why do you love cars?
Well, I kind of grew up around it. You know, my dad is a paint and body guy, and he used to bring stuff home all the time and work in his garage, and just trying to hand him wrenches and pretend that I knew what was going on as a little kid, you just sort of develop an osmosis learning curve. And, you know, it's a way to connect with your old man, and my brother and I both did, and just kind of learned a lot just by watching. And then, you know, as we got to the age where we wanted our own car, and, you know, we weren't, you know, privileged kids by any stretch of the imagination. If we wanted something, we had to go out and work for it and earn it and buy it ourselves. So when we wanted our own cars, me and my brother Blaine, we had to buy a piece of crap and build it to where it would run. My cousins, Glenn Wayne and Alan Pinsky, their dad had a salvage yard, A&H Used Auto Parts, and we used to go and play in those old cars as kids. And, you know, the smells from all those old vehicles, it just gets in your brain, and, I mean, truly, literally does get in your brain. So coming up with my cousins, my brother, we just loved cars. That was the conversation topic. So I grew up around it, and, you know, I blame my family. It's genetic, I guess.
Well, I guess the same can be said for a lot of us. If it's in your genes, it's just in your genes. But you deviated from the car thing for a little while, just out of high school. Tell us about the rock and roll thing. Why did you go straight into tech school or start working as a technician? What caused the sickness that allowed you to follow your fantasy of being a rock star for 10 years on the road?
Well, you know, my dad was a body man, but my dad was also a singer, and I used to listen to his band practice in the basement of our house up in British Columbia in Canada. And, you know, the band practices, the old country songs, and, you know, the Eagles, and it just sort of, you know, we all want to be our dad to a point. You know, we all want to emulate, because that's, you know, it's your old man. So I started practicing with bands in high school, and it was kind of a way for me to fit in and find a place, because it was kind of weird in school. But once I started playing in bands, it was just sort of I felt at home, and that kind of grew into playing gigs. You know, I played my first bar gig when I was 14 years old and actually got paid for it. So that was kind of a fun thing. So that was empowering, and I could spend that money on guitars. I was a bass guitar player at the time, or I could spend it on my piece of crap car that I was trying to build. You know, so the rock and roll thing was sort of a natural progression for me. And it grew to the point to where when I graduated high school, well, I didn't really want to go and get a job, and I didn't, you know, college was not in the cards for me because I didn't get a scholarship. I didn't pay enough attention in school to understand that it was important for me to get good grades and get a scholarship. So the road came up as an option, and you know, found some great guys and just jumped on the road you know, we got good at it. We got really good at it. We played the Western Canadian club circuit and worked our way across Canada. And you know, you do something long enough and you try hard enough at it. Well, you're gonna get good. And I was with great people, very talented people. Had some shady booking agents, but you know, it was a learning curve. And you know, and it was the 80s, and there was lots of great music to emulate. And you know, we tried. We weren't very good, but we tried to be songwriters and write our own songs, and it just progressed to the point to where it took me outside of Canada, and had some opportunities here in the United States, and you know, trying to follow the dream, you know, just trying to chase the dream.
Well, it sounds like you took it pretty seriously, and you certainly put in your time. What made you quit? What made you go back to work in shops?
What made me go back to work? Well, truthfully, one word: Nirvana. The truth is, music is a cycle. It is a cycle of what is popular, and it's constantly moving and constantly changing. And the melodic hard rock that I grew up loving, the Led Zeppelin and, you know, Uriah Heep, Deep Purple, those types of bands, that's the music that I wanted to write and that I wanted to play. And, you know, I was a front man of the band at the time, and, you know, Ian Gillan, great lead singer, Robert Plant, you know, the Def Leppard groups and, you know, the bands like that. That's what I wanted to do. And then here comes Nirvana, changes the game for everybody. You know, it brought me to a point to where, you know, we were a good group. I was with a group called Sin City, and we did label showcases in Los Angeles, and they said, yeah, you guys are pretty good. Nobody's buying that anymore. If you can get army boots and a plaid jacket and don't wash your hair for a while, then we'll come back and listen to you again. But, you know, the truth is we spent a long time getting good at what we were. And if you're honest about it, you're true to yourself. And, you know, at that point, it was time. I'd been doing it long enough. I didn't want to invest the time into going all the way through becoming something that I really wasn't. So I just hung it up. And on top of that, I'd been, you know, a screaming rock and roll singer for a long time. And the truth is, I wasn't as careful as I should have been with my voice. And I had a couple of real bad blowouts. I basically ruined my voice and ruined it. Not from singing hard or high notes or anything like that, but from not taking care of myself and taking care of myself physically. So that was working against me at the time, too. So it was just time to hang it up and, as they say, get the real job. And, you know, at that point I was married. I'm still married to the same girl. She was awesome and wanted me to succeed in whatever it was I was passionate about. But I wanted to be fair with that as well. I was somebody that I wanted to stay with, and I have, and we've been married for 24 years now, and it's great. She's my best friend, and I'm glad that I hung it up when I hung it up.
Okay, so you went back, you got the real job. How did Paintucation start? You've been running that company since 1999. What made you decide to start producing instructional videos?
Paintucation came out of a discussion that I had actually with my wife. She has a children's dance school and pays somebody to videotape her dance recitals. And we started talking about maybe her doing some instructional videos because she's got different specialties with kids, primarily little ones, itty-bitties, and she's really good working with small children. And we thought, well, you know, let's get Mike that produces the videos for the recitals. Let's get him to work with you, and let's do some instructional videos. And she said, well, yeah, okay, well, let's also do one on how to paint a car. And we'll do yours first and see how it goes, and then we'll maybe talk about the dance videos. And the rest is history, and that's the God's honest truth. It was her idea. She argues with me today about it. But I made a deal with Mike Morlock, who needed a paint job on his car, and I said, listen, man, you've documented, you do a video with me, you get a free paint job out of it, and we bartered it. But that's the truth. I couldn't afford to pay for the production, you know, farming it out to somebody that I didn't know. Mike got a free paint job, and I got my paintrication video. It was called Paint Your Own Car, and it kicked everything off, and it really just sort of started to snowball, and it was the nucleus to what I'm doing now, and it's been an interesting ride ever since, for sure.
Now, you've said before that one of the things that you love to do is write for magazines, write tech stories and tech articles. How'd you get started doing that?
Well, the magazines were means to an end. I couldn't afford to advertise. And I needed to advertise. So I remember walking up to one of the editors and owners of a publication called Southern Rotter, and they were very nice folks, and I said, listen, I can't buy ad space in your magazine, but I can provide you free text stories in exchange for you maybe plug in my videos, their how-to videos, and this and that. So we had a great conversation. They trusted me with doing decent tech articles, and I kind of learned how to do it. I sort of bluffed my way into it, and just started doing that as a way to get some advertisement, not free advertisement, because the tech stories that I turned in were, it's tough to write tech. You got to take the pictures and you got to write the captions, and you got to give good information. So I worked really hard at it, and those guys were great for me. And from there, I ended up making friends with some of the editors of some of the, at the time, Peterson Publication Books, who is now Source Interlink. And a couple of those guys saw how passionate that I was about it and how important it was for me to do this, as well as be able to plug my company on a budget. And so I had some mentors that kicked in, Wayne Cook and Miles Cook. They took me under their wing and really gave me great advice. And Jeff Ford, Donald Farr. Donald Farr has been the editor for Mustang Monthly for 30-plus years. Jeff Ford was Mustang Monthly, Modified Mustangs and Fords. I'm a Ford nut anyway, so I gravitated towards those books. And those guys, they didn't completely spoon-feed me, but they showed me the ropes. They talked about digital cameras and gave me advice on what cameras to buy. And honestly, prompted me and prodded me to have faith in myself and to have enough faith in myself to just do it. And in the process of doing it, you get better at it. And I owe a lot to those cats. I really do. And if they're listening, thanks, guys. It's been something that I'll never forget, and I just appreciate it.
So here's a devil's advocate question. It seems like with writing, you're a lot like some of the other things that you're involved in, you're self-taught. So what makes you think you're qualified to call yourself an automotive journalist?
Qualified. Well, qualified is when you don't get fired. So, you know, I guess I did a good enough job to where I could at some point command a freelance rate for the stories. And, you work hard enough at something and you want to do something bad enough. Well, you immerse yourself in it. And it's kind of a study in imitation at start. And then you listen and you read other people's stuff and you see what you like and you see what you don't like, and eventually you gather a rhythm out about it and you get a flow and you figure out how to do it. But the biggest thing was just clicking off the light switch on the wall of fear. And I'm sorry if that sounds corny, but you got to do it. You got to do something. You got to step outside of your comfort zone, and that's really what gave me the confidence to close my eyes and just dive in. And eventually, I got good, and eventually, I became qualified. And I'm proud to say that I've written it for many publications now, and I am an automotive journalist. And it's a great vocation. It's a great way to keep in touch with the industry, and also impart some of the skills that I've learned along the way to, somebody that's going to write a tech article. I know how important it was for me to read tech stories, and still is, on some of the projects that I'm building. You learn. So I took it seriously, and I still do. And it's a fun way to express oneself. And, if you guys listening, if you get in tight with some of these editors, you can make a buck doing it too.
Okay, so this whole time you're starting paint education, you're developing distributors, you're writing for magazines. What else are you doing? Is that all you're doing? Did you just break away from shops, or did you double time it?
Paint education was going great. Eastwood really stepped up. They became a huge advertiser, distributor. And there was some other distributors involved as well. And the video sales were going good. And I was working at the time that I left the collision repair industry, I was working at a place called Heritage Automotive. It was a GM dealership in Middle Tennessee. And I was working. I would fill orders in the morning, and I would be on the message boards and answer tech calls and, you know, subtly plug my videos, but honestly try and help people, and developed a reputation as being somebody that had good information that could pass it on and analogize to the point where the posts that I had on several of these message boards were helpful. So I'm doing that in the mornings of filling orders, and at night I get home from work, feed the dogs, and start filling orders. And on weekends, I'm either working on a new video and, you know, working on something and filling orders and doing tech calls and tech support and trying to write some articles for magazines. And along the way, I became friends with Stacy David, who needed some paint work done on some of his project vehicles for the truck show back when he was still hosting it. So he and I worked out a deal to where we did a trade out, and he would help me with some advertisement on the shows, and I helped him with some paint jobs, and it was a beautiful relationship in the sense that he got great paint work and I got great advertisement. And boy, when those shows would come on and he said, hey, you know, check out Kevin's videos, you can get them from Eastwood, it lit the phones up for weeks and weeks. And it taught me the power of television in the first place, but it also showed me that I had something. I touched on something with fundamental skills, and it was something that I needed to pursue. So finally, I literally came to the point where I'm in the spray booth with a paint gun in one hand and my cell phone in the other, answering a tech call or reordering videos, something had to give. I was driving my wife crazy. I was never home. I was tired, and I had to break away from the shop. So it was a leap of faith, and I thank God that I did it and stepped away from the comfort zone of working at a good shop. It was a busy shop, for the hope that I could do something else with paint education and bring it to the next level. And that's the truth.
Which brings us to a different chapter, the television part. How did that whole TV thing start? How did you get started, and how long have you been doing your own TV series?
Well, the TV thing, well, about the time that right after that Stacy had helped me with some advertisement on the air with the truck show, I was talking with a man that was a former Eastwood tool buyer, John Sloan, and we became good friends, and John was a great guy, and John knew a woman named Melissa Cross, who was a producer of TV shows on the DIY network, and he had heard through a friend of a friend that they were casting for a new show. And I queued up, and I got Melissa's number and started talking to her, and I expressed to her how badly I wanted to host a TV show, and I really wanted to do that because I watched people doing that. I thought it was a really interesting way to make a living and a great way to again kind of broadcast some skills that I'd picked up. So I got to know Melissa Cross, who got me on as a walk-on guest on the Classic Car Restoration series, and when they were casting for a host to replace their other host who couldn't make a season, I was in the running for that, and so I was a guest on that show, and it was a nice place to be considered for that, but I didn't get the gig. So I was horribly disappointed that I didn't get the gig on Classic Car Restoration. Steve Bignante got that, and he hosted that show for 3 seasons, but I was a guest on the show. But DIY was casting for another automotive show called Classic Ride, and they liked my on-camera stuff. I didn't trip over my tongue, I guess, and I was able to spit out halfway decent information. So they gave me the opportunity to audition for the job on TV, and I got the gig, and it was great. We did 3 seasons on Classic Rides, and that's how it all started. I camped out on their doorstep and wouldn't go away until they paid attention to me.
Okay, so here's the elephant in the room. A quick internet search will reveal pictures of you that looked much different than you do today. It's a little bit different haircut. You were rocking the mullet, so fess up. What's going on with the mullet?
Oh, the mullet. Okay. Well, let me start off by saying you can't be an 80s rock singer without long hair. And I had long hair since I was 4 years old. And I always had long hair, and I just did. You know, the way I wore it, I pulled it back into a ponytail and all that kind of stuff. So people used to bug me about having a mullet. So I guess I had a mullet, whatever. I mean, a little internet search and you can find images of me. If you search Kevin Tates on the internet, you're going to see some shots from the 80s and the long hair. But the funny thing is, when, you know, getting back to Melissa Cross, I had long hair, and it was, you know, it was kind of curly and all that kind of stuff, and down to my shoulders. And she said, she called me one day. She said, "Kevin, great news. We've got a screen test for you to audition for Classic Rides." So I said, "Fantastic. I'll be in Knoxville, at the certain date and a certain time." So I showed up, and Melissa said, "Okay, well, your screen test is at 3 o'clock, and we've got you an appointment at the hairdresser's at 1 o'clock. Because they don't want to see you with long hair." And I said, "Well, I don't want to cut my hair." She said, "Okay, well, you could go home." So it was put before me where I could go home and keep my long hair, or I could go to this hairdresser's appointment and get all my hair cut off with the hopes that I would pass this screen test along with whoever knows how many other people were doing that. So, you know, I called Judy and I said, "Hey, what do you think?" And she said, "Well, how bad do you want it?" And I said, "Good answer." And so I stayed, I got the haircut, I did the screen test, and by the way, I did it with a cast up to my arm because I had crushed my thumb on my right hand, and part of the screen test was I had to kickstart a 65 Harley Electroglide that barely wanted to run, and, you know, so grinning through the pain, shooting up my arm, I finally got this stupid thing started, and I don't know, for whatever reason, I got the gig. All the hair's gone, but, you know, nothing ventured, nothing gained, and it's honestly, now my hair doesn't get caught in the creeper wheels anymore, so as the cool kids say, it's all good.
So tell us more about Paintucation. You've got a new video in production, is that what you said earlier?
Well, Paintucation is, we've got 5 DVDs in the title in the library right now. There's one that's called Extreme Detailing that I've dropped because it just, nobody's interested in it, and, you know, I'm not going to keep reproducing it if nobody wants to buy it. And the truth is, I update them about every 5 years because, you know, technology changes so often. Basic fundamentals don't change, but technology changes, and types of paint change. For instance, Paint Your Own Car has evolved into Paint Your Own Car with a spin on waterborne. We show solvent and water. But what I've got in the works now is a fiberglass repair video. In my tenure with the TV shows, I've been exposed to a lot of great, great craftsmen in all sorts of mediums, aluminum, steel, tubing, and fiberglass. And I got to know some of the guys at Downs Manufacturing up in Michigan. And I learned a lot with just being at their facility for a couple of days and working on stuff. So I knew there was things that, boy, it was great fun for me to learn, and I thought it would be a great video to pass on. There's rules of fiberglass, but it's also a very forgiving medium. And if you combine that with steel and with bonding adhesives, man, you can create just about anything. So the fiberglass repair video is coming up soon. It's in final edits, and I hope to have that on the market within a couple of months, certainly this spring. So I'm very excited about that.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to seeing that thing finally come out. What are your future plans? What's in the cards for Paintucation down the road, kind of over the horizon?
Over the horizon. Working with Eastwood. Eastwood and I have started into a partnership, and we're doing some really, really great stuff. One of the coolest things that I've been a part of ever are the live broadcasts that we're doing, the live stream workshops that we're doing, and you can find these on eastwood.com. And it's a way to take advantage of this incredible media that we've all got at our disposal. You know, it's fun to geek out on YouTube and watch, you know, people fall off their bicycles and stuff like that, but there's all kinds of great information. And I've always said that the internet can either be the most evil place in the world where you can see horrible, horrible things, or it can be a learning tool like has never been in our in the history of the world. And that's how I choose to see it. And, you know, thankfully the Eastwood Company does as well. So we're doing live broadcasts, and they're, you know, about once every 2 months we're doing them. We're going to do a lot more. We did live streaming from the SEMA show. Ron Covell did did workshops, and I did the workshops at SEMA 2013. And we're going to do more of the same this year coming up and cover all kinds of subjects. And, you know, I'm just setting up a new spray booth at my shop, and we're going to live broadcast from the paint booth, and that's exciting to me. So that's one of the coolest things that I'm a part of, and hopefully that you guys will enjoy, the people listening will enjoy, and we'll just build off of it, and who knows what it can become. Other things that I've got going on, you guys that have kind of followed me in my Ford geekdom, you know about Jaded. It's my 66 Mustang. And it's a coupe, but it's got an 04 Cobra supercharged 4.6, and it's a really fun car. Well, it's coming to an end. We use all Eastwood paints and materials from the bare steel up, and it sat on the floor in Hot Rod Alley in 2012 SEMA, and it, I'm proud to say it stood up amongst, you know, million-dollar show cars, and it was a testimonial to the quality of the paint. And honestly, besides the paint, what you can do with materials, despite the materials, and you know, it has everything to do with follow-through and a little bit to do with good quality materials as well. But it was an experiment to show people that you can get. Well, the phrase we use is show car results at DIY prices. So we're doing another one. It's a 78 Z28 Camaro, or in my native tongue, Z28 Camaro, and it's just a basic car. However, it's an F-body Camaro, and there's tons of aftermarket support, and that's going to be Project Z-Sled. We're doing a bunch of stuff online where you can follow along the progress of Z-Sled, and it's going to be a really cool Camaro, and I'm very much looking forward to getting that one started.
Well, it sounds like there's no shortage of people that have passed through your life and have been willing to give you a leg up, to give you a hand when you asked for it. I know we always run into roadblocks with people that aren't willing, but it seems like you've really been blessed with people that have wanted to help. So is there anybody that you want to give a shout out to or give some acknowledgement to for, you know, mentorship in the past or things that they've gone out of the way to help you with?
You know, there are mentors that I'd like to thank. There's people that I've crossed paths with that have given me their attention and their time for no other reason than just because they're good people. And honestly, because I asked for it. And there's been also people that weren't so sharing and weren't so forthcoming with sharing their skills. And I remember those people too, and I made a promise to myself that I wouldn't be that guy. So there are people that I want to thank. Family members, my wife, Judy, she's been awesome and is, you know, my best friend and my sounding board and my business partner, and I just dig her. And if it wasn't for her, none of this stuff would be possible. Melissa Cross, who got me my first audition to the TV shows. John Sloan from the Eastwood Company. Jeff Ford, Blaine Siebold, my producer on trucks, Jeff Perry, who probably gritted his teeth through me working at Heritage Body Shop, answering all those calls, and honestly using the shop facility for my own gains, and helping me get Paintucation started. Even though he didn't have his hands in it, he allowed me to do it, and I appreciate that very much. My Uncle Herb, who kind of took us under his wing when we were kids and let us make mistakes without judging us too harshly. And you know, honestly, there's just been a ton of great friends and great people that I've met through the years. And we can't do it alone. And it's nice to know that people are there to help when you ask for it and sometimes even when you don't. So people that I forgot to mention, I apologize, but you know who you are, and you know that you've had contribution in my success, and I will never forget it, and I will thank you forever.
Well, KT, thanks for spending time with us today and sharing a little bit about, you know, your crazy path on the way to where you are and also a little bit about where you're going. It's always nice to get a little bit of the inside scoop and find out a little bit about people and what makes them tick. And in the meantime, you guys out there listening, send us an email to shoptalk@eastwood.com. eastwood.com. Let us know what you want us to talk about. And if your question gets asked on the air, you get some really great prizes from Eastwood. So for now, we're signing off. And this is Shop Talk. Well, I have to say, that was a lot of fun, and I hope we've shared a little insight into what makes Kevin Tates tick. Truthfully, I love what I do, and I love my job, but it's not just blind luck that gets goals reached and milestones passed for anybody. It's plain old-fashioned work, and we all really kind of know that that's the big secret, don't we? So, for now, I'm your host, Kevin Tates, and thanks for listening to Shop Talk. And don't forget to drop us a line at shoptalk@eastwood.com. Let us know what you want us to talk about. So, we'll see you down the road, and remember, do the job. Right with Eastwood. Check out everything at the eastwood.com website. Eastwood has what it takes to do the job right. And you know me, I like to do the job right. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk. I'm Kevin Tates.